This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Today it is the turn of Stevie Nicol and I to be in the presence of greatness. Frank Leboeuf, a World Cup winner.
Oh, I was looking behind me to say, who's coming? Who's coming?
Here in the studio with us.
Yes, pleasure.
We're so happy to have you here with us, Frank.
And I'm so pleased to be with Southern English
people. Don't overdo it, Frank.
No, okay. I'm happy to be with Stevie.
He said he was really happy to be with two people from the north of England. Didn't go down too well with Stevie Nicol before the show, shall we say. We've also got Jan Agafyatov with us today because we must continue the chat about Cristiano Ronaldo. We're very much looking forward to what Jan has to say about everything that's gone on over the weekend, where we've learned that Cristiano Ronaldo has told Manchester United he wants to leave this summer if the right bid comes in. Jan, is this not a kick up the backside for Manchester United to do everything they can to keep hold of this player?
Well, it's unbelievable these days to be a Man United fan, isn't it? And this is timing of the century. They're just waiting for one player to get in. Anyone, just get us a player, anyone, to get into Manchester United. And the only one who kind of produce, get goals for them, Tuesday, this time to say, I am leaving. I mean, we saw the last 2 weeks that Jorge Mendes, he offered Ronaldo to any club in the world. I mean, I'm at my home club in Norway now. I just waited for him to offer Ronaldo to my home club. Well, we never thought that this was real. We thought this was just kind of thing that gets some more money and so on. And then this weekend, before Ten Hag has any player, well, there is no one left to buy at Ajax anyway because they're gone to other clubs. And then he comes out and says this. So, yes, this is, I won't say disrespectful, because Cristiano Ronaldo is in an age that every year will count for him, but timing is unbelievable.
The guys were talking about it on yesterday's show, Stevie, and there was a real feeling of why now, but the word is that he likes Ten Hag, but he's not happy that there haven't been new signings, or he's not that over-enamoured by maybe some of the new signings that they've been linked with.
Makes complete sense. You know, I don't think he's been a mercenary about this. I think he does have some loyalty to the club, and I think maybe what you've just said about the fact that nobody's come in, he's probably went, you know what, I need to think about myself. I've only got a couple of years, if I'm lucky, at the highest level, and I can't afford to be part of a project. And this, by the way, looks as though it's turning out to be not a project, but an absolute shambles. So he doesn't want anything to do with that. And quite frankly, I don't blame him. And I think he's doing them a favour. Because with him leaving, if he does go, the expectation this year for Manchester United was pretty low anyway. But the fact that he goes, if he goes, will completely take away any expectation. Regardless of the name Man United, what they have and the position they find themselves in, this might actually end up being good for them. They can just clean everything out and start again and let Ten Hag do a job. Because if Cristiano Ronaldo's there and he doesn't want to be there, it's going to go the opposite way. It's going to be an absolute, I said a shambles. What's worse than a shambles? Disaster?
Yeah, the
fiasco.
The thing for me is, I agree with Stevie, if the real reason was the fact that he couldn't sign anybody. And yesterday we heard that Frankie de Jong will stay maybe in Barca, or maybe they're bluffing because they want more money. But the real reason was, I don't want to stay because we don't play the Champions League. So it's why we say, why now? Yesterday, because he could have said that like a month or 2 months ago and tried to find another club. So we don't have the reason why he said that. But I think it's kind of sad to see, and for the fans especially, to see that the best player that he had last season wants to leave.
What do you think of what the guys have said about it here in the studio, Jan, with Stevie saying that perhaps he's actually doing United a favour?
Well, I don't agree on this being said for all year that the big problem of Manchester United is Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, if that is your biggest problem, then the analysis at Manchester United should start all over again. I understand what Stevie is saying in terms of maybe they can start and expectations, and we see the numbers that Cristiano Ronaldo is very important for them. But you have to replace 24 goals in the Premiership. And you've seen a lot of clubs now searching for that number nine, that goal scorer. It's hard to find. But I think that is something here behind that we don't know about. I guess that Jorge Mendes and Cristiano Ronaldo, there have been some deadlines. The so-called project, we have to see that we are coming in players and so on and so on. So I think there is something more to this than we are to be seen. This, I respect Ten Hag, but I'm not sure that I want to stay here. I'm not buying that. I'm just buying that Manchester United haven't delivered, and the prolific man, the most prolific man at Manchester United, don't believe in them. And I mean, that is a really, really kick to them, because Manchester United going into this season, they need some fresh blood. And if they think that Ten Hag is enough, it's not enough. It's not enough even in the management part of the club. And we now haven't started by how to get more players in or better players in.
So who would be enough then?
Well, I think that the main thing, we discussed this before. I mean, if the Manchester United fans think it's enough to get in players, they've tried that for a couple of years. Have a look how much money they have spent to get in players. That is not enough. Manchester United is, from structure here, terrible. We've said that we talked a lot of agents, we talked a lot of people, how Manchester United are structured. Have a look of the club that you compare. We can compare them on the pitch. Then they're losing games. If we start comparing them with the structure of Manchester United, how the recruitment department is organized, how the management is organized, they're even further down at the table, I'm afraid to say to the Manchester United fans.
It's a fact nowadays that Manchester United doesn't attract top players like Arsenal. And it's the same thing. They went so much down, you know, after Wenger and for Manchester United after Sir Alex Ferguson, that they're not competitive enough to attract top players. It was because of the excuse of nostalgia that maybe Ronaldo came, or because maybe he would have signed for Manchester City, that suddenly somebody got on him and said, no, you cannot, and signed for Manchester United. But that's the main problem that they have, that they couldn't be successful after Sir Alex Ferguson. Therefore, big players rather go to Real Madrid, Manchester City, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, or even Juventus.
I think what's even worse though, Man United, and I'm thinking about my old team at Liverpool. You know, when Liverpool went from the top and started falling down the league, yes, it was because they didn't bring in the right players and they didn't have the right manager. Exactly the same thing that Man United are doing. The difference between what's happening at United now is that everything is toxic. As bad as Liverpool was, it wasn't a toxic atmosphere all the time. It was a disappointing atmosphere. It was a, we need to get better and we need to find a way of getting back to the good old days. Whereas at Manchester United, if I'm a player, I don't want to go anywhere near it because it's just toxic. Everything goes wrong. Nobody wants to be there. Yeah. Never mind even try.
Yeah, go on, Jan.
Yeah, I just thinking it's an organisation where half of the organisation are in the back in the Sir Alex Ferguson days, and that is ages ago, that everybody should expect them to be Manchester United players. That is the biggest thing that could happen to you. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer always said the same. He said, yeah, they should be proud to play for Manchester United. But I think that if you look at this as a project, and if you see when Mané went to Bayern Munich, Bayern Munich was surprised that he, in the first meeting, said, yes, I need a new challenge. Yes, I want to play for Bayern Munich because I feel the atmosphere. I feel the performance culture at this club. I want to be a part of that. Footballers, we may be not the most bright people in the world, but we do understand how the environment is built in a club. This easy thing that we want to play in the Champions League, easy thing about money, important, yes, but you also have to come to an environment that attracts you, that you want to play football.
You say that, Jan, about Bayern Munich and the culture, but Robert Lewandowski does not want to stick around there, according to all reports right now. He has his sights set firmly on Barcelona. Even the front page of the press there, in the Catalan press, saying that he's absolutely crazy to come, and now all the talk has intensified, because by coincidence, he bumped into Xavi in Ibiza, in the same restaurant as well, and apparently the word is they didn't talk too much, it was just niceties. But there is a report saying that as they left one another, he said, I'm already looking forward to training with you. Pretty interesting situation, yeah. Jan.
Yeah, and I just want to see that photo of them with Pinocchio noses that I didn't talk to. That is point one. But secondly, I don't think you can compare that with Lewandowski. He's been 11 years there. He's coming also to the end of his career. He wants a new challenge. He has given Bayern Munich 11 good years, scoring between 30 and 40 league goals every season. He wants a new challenge. And it's going to be quite interesting now if he's going to turn up for the first training session. He's been very clear. He's been highly spoken about another meeting's been going between Bayern Munich and Erling Haaland. And they told him that we want you to come here. That was always a high-risk game of Bayern Munich. And they lost out on Erling Haaland. And I think we won't see Robert Lewandowski play for Bayern Munich again. I can't see this being sold. And people say, yes, he did the same at Borussia Dortmund. And he played another season before he went for free to Bayern Munich. But that was another age. And it was another age of Robert Lewandowski. So I think this is going to be hard. And that Xavi wants this player, I think there's all to be seen. I still think they got WhatsApp in Barcelona as well, don't they?
Well, maybe. But just going back, in the Cristiano Ronaldo situation, Jan, you said there seems to be more to it than meets the eye. Is Cristiano Ronaldo going to Bayern?
No, I don't think so, because I don't think that Bayern Munich will have the money. They will have the explanation, because they've said no to so apparently in the public, they've said they don't have the money. So I can't see that happening. Having said that, I think that Cristiano Ronaldo could be a short-term solution for a Bayern Munich, a Chelsea kind of club. I think that is a more likely. But this could going to the end and saying when Robert Lewandowski leaves, we need a short-term replacement for him. Cristiano Ronaldo, still not true, but you never know. I mean, Salihamidzic has to produce if he loses the best goal-getter in Germany I've seen since Gerd Müller.
What club makes the most sense for Cristiano Ronaldo? We've seen him linked with Bayern Munich, Chelsea and Napoli as well.
Napoli?
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard, you know. He is 37, so you have to take that into consideration. On top of it, he is with a big wage, very high wage. So not too many clubs. And you say some of them, and there are like two, three, maybe four, we can afford to get Ronaldo, considering that he can still score like 30 goals a season. And if you want to believe that he is still effective. I don't know what Chelsea wants to do. I don't know what Real Madrid wants to do. But Real Madrid, the same thing. What do you do with Benzema? Benzema was following the leader at the time. It was Ronaldo. But now he's the leader, you know. And Vinicius Junior and Rodrigo are alongside Benzema. So if you put Ronaldo in the middle of it, you can blow up all the system. So it's going to be difficult.
But what if you put him in the middle of it at Chelsea, where maybe they could do with a leader in the forward line?
Well, I was going to say that. Well, the first thing against that would be Manchester United, why would they let him go to Chelsea? Because it's going to be hard enough for them to get in the top four next year without giving their best player to Chelsea. Yeah, that's number one.
Yeah, but Steve, if he doesn't want to stay, you know, you can't keep a player who doesn't want to stay.
I'm not fine, but you talk about making bad decisions, then you've got to get him out somewhere else and you've got to find a way of doing it, whether you take some of his wages or whatever. The other thing that might work with Chelsea is that maybe the new owners want to make a noise.
Yeah.
Maybe they want to make a noise.
So they've got no intention of getting him, or they do want to get him to make that noise?
I'm sure they want to make a noise and they'll try and do what they can to get him. But again, if you're Man United, you're crazy.
Of course.
But after Chelsea, I can't, where? Where's he going to go?
It would be perfect for Chelsea, because they're trying to find, because Lukaku left, it would be either Lewandowski or Ronaldo that would be perfect for Chelsea, because they need somebody who can score goals, which was lacking last season, and on top of it, somebody with the skills, the leadership, that's what they need too. So Ronaldo would be perfect for Chelsea, but I agree with Stevie. I don't think Manchester United will let him go there.
But Jan, which club would make the most sense for Cristiano Ronaldo?
Chelsea, absolutely. They will create enough chances. He will score goals for them. On the other hand, Stevie, if you use your argument, it can also be that the new owners and the new wannabe head of sport, head of everything, this could be a fantastic statement for them. Remember back when they got Lukaku, they wanted Haaland, they wanted Lewandowski, they want a big number nine and a short-term thing for Cristiano Ronaldo going to London, score between 30 and 40 goals, that maybe that fits some bills. Or maybe they can't pay bills, but it will fit some bills.
The last solution, maybe, would be Paris Saint-Germain. If Neymar leaves, you can put Mbappe on the left side, Messi behind, and Ronaldo at front. Oh, wow. And Craig Bowley would say, what a circus.
Yeah, he probably would say what a circus, but at least he wouldn't be saying it about Chelsea. Anyway, some of the biggest names we're hearing right now in the transfer window. Rumours about all of them, and you can check out the latest over on our website. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Head on over to our YouTube page to see what happened when we asked Frank his top five Chelsea flops yesterday. Today we're giving him a much kinder task. We're asking him the top five moments in French football history. And he's actually started with a year that he wasn't even born in at number five.
Even Stevie wasn't born. So yeah, it's the 58, and the first time that France reached the semi-final with Jules Fontaine, Raymond Coppa as well. We played. We used to play for Real Madrid, and that was absolutely fantastic. They lost against Brazil, who won the World Cup. Pelé winning his first World Cup at the age of 17. But yeah, we had a great game, and Jules Fontaine scored 13 goals during the whole competition, and I think it's still the record.
13 goals in six matches.
In six matches, yeah, yeah. That was a different football, I have to say. You know, but that was great for France, and they are legend. We call the Coppa generation, and after you have the Platini generation, then the Zidane generation. I don't know, how do we call the 2018 generation, maybe the Mbappe generation.
Okay, in the number four, Euro 2000.
Yeah, because we confirmed that we were a very good team, winning the 98 and then the Euro. It's always tougher to win a Euro than a World Cup for me. And we were very fortunate, because I think Alessandro Del Piero accepted to be teased about that Italy were a better side that final. But Trezeguet made that fantastic golden goal, and we won.
You like the golden goal rule?
I loved it, because we won in 98 with Laurent Blanc against Paraguay, yeah. And then we won
Well, you will do if you win.
Yeah, of course, you always like it when you win. So.
But where there's a will, Todd, there's a way as well, scoring at the death to even send it to
us. That was crazy. That was intense. That was crazy. And I didn't play that final, but we were all jumping on the bench. That was great.
Nice stuff to see. Okay, we're going way back, and you picked Euro 1984, which I think is one that you could have been at but missed.
That was crazy. That guy was absolutely fantastic. Yeah, that missed the semi-final against Portugal because of the date. That was the only competition that Platini played without injury. And this has been fantastic. He scored 9 goals in 5 games. 2 hat-tricks against Yugoslavia, I would say, and I forgot the other one.
He was the cream on the top of that team, though, but he had so many good players.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the best team team you've ever had.
Oh, yes, for me, for sure. I'd always say that.
And to watch, it was exciting to watch. He scored great goals. He was unbelievable. Yeah. But the team as a whole was...
No.
Who was my favourite? My favourite was a right back. What was his name again?
You have Batista.
He played for Marseille.
Oh, Amoros.
Amoros.
Manuel Amoros. Oh, yeah.
Loved him.
He was named best player in the competition in 86.
Number two, regarded as one of the best football matches of all time.
Yeah, that was a real nightmare. I was in Germany, you know, when you do exchange with school, and I was in a family, and we were leading 3-1, and the family kicked me out. They were upset, and that's the game change, you know, I would say changing, where Batista is hit by Schumacher, lost teeth, lost conscious, and we lost in penalties. GJ6 and I think Bossis missed the penalty. And that was awful. Everybody remembers 82. Alain Giresse, one of the top players, says that he still sometimes have nightmares at night when he sleeps about that game. That was crazy. And when we won in 98, we were leading 2-0. Marcel Desailly got red carded. We said we don't want to do that.
Yeah, right.
And we thought about that. Well, I thought. And that's the top of the top, because the first time that was in France against the best team in the world, Brazil, and when Zizou decided to declare that he was the best player in the world, especially in that final. And that's great. I had the chance to play that final because Laurent Blanc was red carded, and I played, and I had to mark Ronaldo. And you know,
that's a bold head.
Yeah,
that's a clean sheet.
Well, yes.
But on the pitch, are you looking at Zidane thinking, oh wow, or are you just so focused on the fact that you're in a World Cup final?
No, I was focused on Ronaldo. Where is he? You know, I want to make sure. Now, even when we had the ball, I was looking at him and say, where is he? Because when we lose the ball, if he's too far away, I'm dead. So. And you had Rivaldo, you had Bebeto as well, so it's not like he was on his own. It was a fantastic team, and it would have been more difficult for us to win, to play against the Netherlands. They lost in semi-final in penalties, I think, against Brazil, but they were a much better team. We were happy to play Brazil in final, I have to say. Well, with all due respect, of course.
Jan, looking on, what did you make of Frank's list? Did you like it?
Oh, I like it. This is a beauty. This is a romance of football. And that game in 82, I was 15. I remember it as it was yesterday. I remember it was 1-1 in the 90th minute. Then 92, 98, 3-1 France. And then Romanigue came. And I remember the long cross to Rubisch, who headed it back to Klaus Fischer, who did his speciality. That was his overhead kick. I make it 3-3. And if you see on that picture, Uli Stielik, he was crying like a baby. Yeah. He missed the penalty. And West Germany seemed to go out. And then Bossins from Nantes, I guess, got it. But, I mean, he's also remembered for Schumacher, Tony Schumacher, killing Batista. It's not killing in metaphor, to be clear. But it was an unbelievable game. And if I'm not wrong, Frank, I remember also 78 World Cup. Although France didn't go past the group stage in Argentina, we noticed there was something going on in France football. That was the first time I kind of saw that artistry, that entertainment kind of game. And they were in a very difficult group, I remember, in that World Cup.
That was the Platini generation. Michel Platini said that he went to Argentina to learn about the World Cup, but to enjoy the time, not to win it. And they played a game against Argentina, and Mario Kempes, for me, became a legend. You know, it was, it was beautiful. He was scoring goals and everything. And they played against Italy as well. And they played the last game against Hungary without the shirt of the national team because they forgot it. So they played with the local team shirt in white and red and green. That was crazy. It was insulting our country, whatever. Yeah. But that was the first experience of the new generation. And I agree with Stevie. For me, even if we won 98 and 2000, the best generation ever in France was the Platini generation.
But speaking of generations, where's 2018?
Well, I had to choose five. There would have been six, I would say. It wasn't a fantastic World Cup. They did well, but it was in Russia. I think Croatia were much better. We scored the two first goals. I think it wasn't a free kick. It wasn't a penalty. When they played against Argentina, I mean, it was not. It wasn't perfect. That's why I say that.
That team didn't have the flair of the other team.
I got a minute. This team won the World Cup, so Frank's like, you know what? Our World Cup win was better. I'm not putting them in.
That team didn't have the flair.
No, that's not like that.
There's a big difference.
A bit. but it's it would have been perfect. I would have said yes. They would have been put in the first spot. But really, it wasn't that good. It wasn't a perfect World Cup for any teams, I would say. I didn't see big games. When they played against Belgium, they won, but Belgium didn't play the good game as well. So it wasn't... they won from the back door, let's say, and then because maybe of the referee in the final as well. So,
What about France 2022?
Well, it's possible. And you know, I like it because before the Euro, and it's always worked like that with national team, when everything goes well, you can be prepared for disaster in the middle of the competition, like in 2002. But they seem to struggle, and I like that. We struggled in 98. That team struggled, the Platini generation struggled before 84. Everybody was saying that they're not good enough. They want it. 98, the same thing. 2018, it wasn't that good as well before, and they won it. So I want to believe that's a good sign that nothing goes right now. So we'll see.
Well, you can check out Frank's top fives over on our YouTube page. You can also check out some new content. The full story of Paul Pogba at Manchester United. Lazy player or poorly handled star. 45 minutes worth of these guys with lots of extra footage as well. Make sure to go and check that out. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Just a look at Bayern Munich over the last 10 seasons. Last season, they won their 10th straight Bundesliga title, which is a feat never before achieved in one of Europe's top five leagues. Some think that the gap is continuing to get wider between Bayern and the rest of the teams in the Bundesliga, which means there is less and less competition, if that is the way you think about it. Uli Hoeneß certainly does. Former Bayern Munich president said, I used to be against breaking the 50+1 rule, but now the Italians and the English are pulling away from us. If we want to be at the top of Europe, we have to change 50+1. The rule can be abolished. On the one hand, we want to win the Champions League. On the other hand, we want to stick to 50+1. You can't have it both ways. Investors and sustainability don't exclude each other. Let's take a look at Liverpool. The club is owned by an American, but you still get goosebumps every time they sing You'll Never Walk Alone. That doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. So the 50+1 rule limits any single investor to owning a maximum of 49% of a club. It's to protect the Bundesliga in their eyes. But Jan, let's talk about this and what we've just heard here from the former Bayern president, who's wanting to make the Bundesliga more competitive. And he thinks that if rich investors can come in at the surrounding clubs, that will be the case. They can challenge Bayern financially.
Yeah, I think there are two ways, as Uli Hoeneß is seeing this, because he's calm that Bayern will win it for ages because they still got more money than the rest of them. But he also sees the problem with Bayern Munich. They can't compete with the other teams in Europe. And also that the Bundesliga got to be more competitive so that the other teams get better. But Ole Gunnar will always look at Bayern, and the reason he would have been against to abolish the 50+1 because it's fitted Bayern. But he sees now, of course, that this can't go on forever. They can still make it. They can still get the best players from Germany into the Bayern team. They can get Mané, but coming 2, 3, 4 years down the road, there is no chance that they can compete because they can't attract the best players in the world. Their academy is not good enough. And for the people to understand, this 50+1 rule is that the 50+1 of the share, so to say, is staying by the members. And there are some great assemblies when Bayern Munich are having their assemblies with these 50+1 members. And it's unbelievable. It's more entertaining sometimes than seeing the Bundesliga. So Uli Hoeneß is, for the first time in his life, he looks like that he's thinking of other teams than Bayern. But mind you, he's thinking of Bayern again because he wants Bayern to win the Champions League. Then they need more money, and it would probably attract the most money because a normal investor outside a 50+1 rule in Germany can be a company like Allianz or Adidas or BMW. But now he wants to open for investors like in England and in some other countries.
So let me ask you this, Jan. Do you agree with what Uli Hoeneß is saying here?
This is a big question that you're asking me, Kay, because you can see in Spain that model when you got some kind of president coming in, spending all the money for 3, 4 years and then he go away. Or in England, you have all kind of owners coming into a club and taking away a lot of identity and so on and so on. So I think that I'm a bit both ways for German because there's a lot of things that is very good to German football. It's run by the fans, it's run by the members. And if you ask a common German fans, it's not like in Newcastle where they will wear the costumes of their Arab owners. These will demonstrate. If someone came in and said to Bayern, we have this big tycoon, he wants to give you €1 billion to invest in your team, they won't celebrate in the streets of Munich. They will demonstrate. So this is a difference in the fan culture that is that you have to respect when you change this kind of thing. So I see that there could be a kind of change that maybe they will do a higher number of investors possible. But I can't see that this English kind of thing that kills the football pyramid will come into German football.
What if it was a smaller club like Eintracht Frankfurt, for example, Jan? Would they still be demonstrating against it?
Yes, they would absolutely do that. And if you see, there is a good example of that, Hoffenheim. There is a good example and a bad example because Dietmar Hopp, who is the owner, he is a big fan of the club since he was a kid and he is invested in that club, using his company to get him to be one of the best German clubs. Same with RB Leipzig and so on, but they're very, very unpopular in Germany. There's always controversy around their ownership. So yes, it's a small club, even a small club, got that money, they would still demonstrate because they want the ownership of their club as it is. And it's a good example of Eintracht Frankfurt winning the Europa League, now playing Real Madrid in the Super Cup. And they have done it through sustainability, to kind of a business plan to get them into the top of football. So, yes, the Frankfurt fans would do exactly the same.
The strangest thing for me is who's talking about this is Uli Hoeneß. And it can only be that he knows that nothing's going to change. And he's trying to make it look good, or he's trying to stick up for the man in the street. Because this absolutely would hurt Bayern Munich. It's perfect for Bayern Munich. And it's only 2 years ago that Bayern Munich were European champions. So this, the way it is now, suits Bayern Munich down to the ground. They've continually got the best talent from other German teams, and they've gone out and this year they've got money. So I don't understand why Uli Hoeneß is coming out of this. Because if it was to go the other way, it would destroy exactly what Bayern is all about and the way they've gone about it for as long as I can remember. It makes no sense.
And for me, I'm always on the fan side, you know, where in a way, you know, it's affordable to go to a German stadium, and it's why it's packed every day of the Bundesliga. And we saw investors. We saw investors in France, in England, and in Spain. And we saw that most of clubs are in debt because chairmen do whatever they want. So it's nice to have maybe one country who can socialize a little bit and also make sure that the finances are in a good side and in a good shape. So I'm completely for that rule plus that 50 rule plus one, and I think they should stand like that. And yes, it's sad to see that there is no competition with Bayern Munich. I agree with Stevie. I think Lyonnais is very pleased with that. But it's due to the other to find a way to become more competitive. And I think players are happy to play. And I think if you love football, you will go to Dortmund, you will go to Leipzig to play games in front of a full crowd, and also to try to beat Bayern Munich and to be competitive in the Champions League. Money doesn't talk for everybody, and in Germany it's a good example.
One player who could be leaving the Bundesliga for the Premier League is US men's national team star Tyler Adams. Leeds United is said to be in talks with the player from Leipzig as a replacement for Calvin Phillips. It's said that he is Jesse Marsh's preferred player for the role, Jan. What do you make of this? Do you think he'd be a good fit there at Leeds?
Well, RB Leipzig, they got a big squad. They have to let some players go. The problem for Tyler Adams could be that Konrad Laimer, another midfielder, would probably go to Bayern Munich. He's the preferred choice of Julian Nagelsmann. He used to coach him, of course, at RB Leipzig. So, but Tyler Adams could go there. And I spoke just before we went on, and I talked to my people in Leipzig, and they said that Jesse Marsh is so in love with this player, so this is all about money to get him to Leeds. Do I think that he's as good now as Calvin Phillips? No, the answer is no. But it is maybe as good as it gets for Leeds at this moment. And Tyler Adams could be a good fit for Leeds United. But I still want to see this, what happened to Konrad Laimer. I think that will have something to do with Tyler Adams getting into out of RB Leipzig and going to Leeds United.
How would you describe his career so far at Leipzig, Jan?
Well, last season he played, was it just 12 starters he had for the club? Having said that, it was an interesting season because they started with Jesse Marsh and Tedesco came on and they changed a bit the system and so on and didn't fulfill it. And maybe it's time for Tyler Adams to take the next step. And I guess the Premier League could be a good fit for him to go to Leeds United.
Well, the Bundesliga is almost back on your screens. It's just around the corner. August 5th, it all kicks off again with Eintracht Frankfurt against Bayern Munich. And we'll see how Leipzig can fare this season. They're away to start their campaign against Stuttgart.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. We've got to let Frank go off to LA now.
Yeah, my road trip is just starting.
Why do you look disappointed?
He's going to love us and leave us. We've had fun, haven't we?
I'm sad to not seeing you. Yeah. But I'm going to see you maybe in November. Yeah. We have a World Cup.
Well, we've got him for a little bit longer. Yeah. Extra time.
Yeah, I'll
coming
sit back to learn, Frank.
Okay. Stick around for that. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Frank Leboeuf here in the flesh in the studio.
Yes.
Stevie Nicol here in the flesh in the studio. A little bit more normal like we're used to him.
Yeah.
And also Jan Agapiotov, not in the flesh in the studio. And also not sat in front of some hotel door either.
Yeah, that's a good thing, but I'm not sure about the painting. I don't recall like the Van Gogh or the Matisse or the Money. I don't know.
Van
Is that
Gogh.
Your... Who painted that?
Van Gogh. Yeah. Hey, listen. I'm in my home house in Norway where I was born. And this actually painting, this is of the farm that is just like 2 minutes away where my great-grandparents live. Oh. So this is not Van Gogh. This is not Picasso. This is a local artist, Frank. That's what we do. People are not winning
We felt it. We sensed it, you know, that it wasn't Matisse. But, you know, we were just told that Jan was born in the house.
Yeah, were you born in the house, Jan?
No, I was. I will rephrase it. I was made in this house.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
All right.
Well, we don't want to know that. We don't want to know that.
All right. Okay, guys. Which of these moments in history would you say is the most jaw-dropping? Cantona karate kick of the Palace fan, Zidane headbutt in the World Cup finals, or Suarez's bite of Chiellini in the World Cup?
May I start?
Yeah.
Cantona, I can understand because somebody insulted him and the same for Zidane. And it's not because they're French, but Suarez... It's not only once that he did it. he did it a couple of times. So, I don't know, the guy has to eat. Maybe he was angry or whatever. But there is no explanation whatsoever with the biting.
Yeah, three times, I think. So you're going for Suarez?
Oh, yes, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
Would you agree, Stevie?
No, I'm going to go with Zidane. I mean, again, understand the Cantona. You're walking down the sideline and some guys can just in your ear the whole way. Can see that going. Suarez, as you said, he did it three times. So it's hardly a surprise.
Right? Okay, you go that way. Okay.
But Zidane, from nowhere, to do that.
That's true.
Wow, that for me is
and the last game of his career.
Oh.
That's sad in a way.
It is sad, but some people still see that as iconic.
You know what?
In the way he ended it.
I was living in Los Angeles at the time, like four years after. People didn't remember that Italy won. They only remember the headbutt of Zidane.
Yeah.
So I said maybe he did it on purpose. Maybe it was to get more endorsements, whatever.
To take the credit. They remember they won in my house, I'll tell you, Frank. What about you, Jan?
First I have to say, Frank, it has to be told that Zidane has done that before as well. So Zidane has headbutted people before, if I'm not completely wrong, in his career. But I would go for Cantona. And the reason is that Cantona, I made an interview with David May, the defender of Manchester United. And I asked him what Sir Alex Ferguson said in the dressing room after that. Because Cantona was the holy cow of Sir Alex Ferguson. He never criticised Cantona. So I asked him, but at this time, Sir Alex Ferguson must have a go at Cantona. And David May said, the first thing Sir Alex Ferguson said, that is, David, why did you play him that FF ball? So he didn't even criticize him. I had a chance to interview Sir Alex Ferguson and I asked him about that situation and he was just start laughing and he said, well, probably I said that to him and so on. So I have to go for Cantona.
Craig explained that yesterday, that he was yelling at everybody and after he turned to Eric and said, Eric, you shouldn't have done that. That's not nice.
Yeah, that was on yesterday. Extra time, go check it out.
Yeah.
You were going to say something then, Stevie.
No, I remembered the thing.
The anecdote.
Yeah.
David May, they always say, is one of the funniest footballers. Have you found that?
Really? I've never spoken
to
David
May. Yeah, I've heard
that before. Yeah,
is he a funny guy, right, Jan?
Yeah, he is a funny lad. He can tell a story. And when I started with Ferguson saying, I'm going to quote David May now, and he was just shaking his head. Oh, I know what's coming now. So he's honest.
Okay, one for Stevie. Start, bench or drop? Ooh. Mo Salah, Ian Rush, Luis Suarez.
Whoa.
Well, you got to start Ian Rush.
Yeah.
You got to bench Mo Salah, and you drop, unfortunately, Luis Suarez.
Now that we've got you here, are you happy about the Salah news, the extension?
I've got to tell you, I wasn't surprised at all. I thought it was a matter of time. I just didn't see, there's no way Liverpool, if they thought they weren't going to re-sign Salah, were going to let Mane go. I just didn't see it.
£350,000
so
a week, is that correct?
Yeah.
You had the same salary, I guess?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have taken a drop. To be honest, but
yeah. Right, all right. Nice one. Okay, Jan, being a well-read gentleman yourself, any autobiographies of footballers you would recommend for my vacation in 2 weeks?
Oh, that is a good one. I would probably, if you want to... No, I won't do any jokes about Frank LaBeouf's book because there would be too many on this show.
Or Stevie Nichols' book.
Or Steve Nichols' book, no. No, I will go back, if you want a nostalgic, I will go to back when Roy Keane was doing one and Niall Quinn kind of answered him in his book. That was entertaining. And the highlight for me there, Roy Keane, Niall Quinn explaining to Roy Keane was being 17 rating for Ireland, coming too late to the plane, and Mick McCarthy, the national coach, coming over to him when he's too late in the plane, and Mick McCarthy said, "And you call yourself a national player?" And Roy Keane, 18, turns around and say, "You call yourself a national coach?" I mean, that is not a good start of a good relationship. And that kind of book that is, and those two books of Roy Keane and Niall Quinn kind of answering his autobiography, brilliant reading.
Also, that's two books from Jan. It's a two-week holiday, though, so maybe.
We say to Sergeant Barnes, you know, breathe a little bit, you know, read something else, you know, enjoy your life about something else but football. You know, read Ken Follett, fantastic writer, English writer, and you will go somewhere else, you know, and go back to football within 2 weeks.
We want to read your book. We need to read
your book. It's in French, so he won't understand anything. It will be a waste of time. So.
I read Stevie's book. It's very funny. Have you got an autobiography that you'd recommend, Stevie?
Not a football one. No.
Not your own.
Well, obviously I'm going to see my own. Five league titles and a packet of curse if anybody's listening.
It's worth it. I've read it as well.
If it may, when Frank is there, there is an autobiography of Napoleon Bonaparte. It's the best autobiography I've ever read.
He was a substitute. We don't know him.
He's just been linked to Manchester United. We will probably not get him. But Napoleon was not only a big warrior. He was also a society builder. And what he did in Egypt and all that kind of things, fantastic read. That is the best recommendation
true,
I can give.
We still go behind these rules, you know, and laws a lot in France. So.
A little heavy for me, that Napoleon.
I know.
Yeah, just read Stevie's. That's not
going to be enough.
Funny. Very funny. Frank, start bench or drop? Makalele, Kante, or Essien?
Oh, my God. That's a nightmare because they all play for Chelsea. They've all been absolutely fantastic. You know what? You could have put Tigana as well. And because Tigana is the father of all those players, same type of players, you know, not too big, physically strong. Mm-hmm. I will go for Makelele at first because what he did in Real Madrid before talking about Chelsea was absolutely fantastic. And I think when he left Real Madrid, he didn't win the Champions League for years. Then I go for Kante. I love the guy. I mean, the guy is absolutely fantastic. And I'm sorry for Michael Essien because he's the one who got my number the first after I left, years after. Nobody was wearing the number 5. And I love Michael, he was huge. The thighs, I touched the thighs of the him beast, when he was with Drogba, he was a beast. Yeah. So it's hard to say, obviously start Makelele, bench Kante and drop Essien, but really, with all due respect, why do you always put those questions? Because it's nice.
You
don't want easy ones, do you?
That one?
Yes. Well, he could make it really easy. He could make it Makelele, Kante and Burley. I mean, which way would you have that?
Yeah, true.
I mean, he can make it easy, right?
Yeah, that's with no respect whatsoever.
I'm laughing that he said it's difficult, but he still brought another player into the fold as well. Yeah, he could have Keegan out. All right. Since pre-season training has started, any fond or funny memories of your first day at pre-season training, when you joined your first professional club or when you transferred to a new club?
Chelsea Football Club, first week, nobody talked to me in French and I was barely speaking English. And Graham Riggs was the head coach of Ruud Gullit, and he played for Le Havre and another club, and so he was speaking and he was speaking French, but he didn't talk to me for like 15 days, and came after 15 days, he said, "Do you want to speak a little bit of French?" I said, "Yes, please, just like two words, you know." And I remember that Gullit gave, and we talked about that with Craig yesterday, that they gave us a night out, but maybe because it was my first days with Chelsea, I stayed with Dimitri Carey in the same room. All the British, they went out. and came back completely hammered.
Really?
And I have to say, yeah, Craig Burley was in the middle of it, of course. And Mark Hughes came into our house and put my bed, and I was sleeping, and the bed of Dimitri Karin upside down. And Dimitri Karin was insulting Mark Hughes. I didn't say a word because I wasn't speaking English, and because Mark Hughes was huge, so and a legend. So that was my first experience with Chelsea, but it was fun at the end of the day.
I can't believe that Ruud Hullet was just like, you know, I'll just wait 2 weeks and then I might give him a little word or two.
Yeah.
It builds character, Frank.
Oh my God. Exactly. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah, but I was a big, I wanted to learn English. I remember Denis Suárez saying to the Italians, because they were speaking Italian at the table for during dinner and lunches, and he said, well, here we are in England, we speak English or you don't speak.
What?
And everybody stuck to the rule.
How did you learn back then without Duolingo or?
Well, I didn't listen to Denis Suárez. I didn't listen to Craig Burley or Kevin Hitchcock because for me they weren't speaking English. I read some newspapers, watched TV, and I was talking to I forgot the physio, Terry Burns.
Terry, I think.
Mm-hmm. Used to work after with David Beckham. Fantastic guy, very smart, speaking a perfect English. That was a good experience.
Stevie, I feel like you've got a little story here.
Well, there's nothing fun about pre-season.
And what? You'd get the knitted jerseys from Norwegian fans.
I'm getting to that, but that's that's up until you go away. Between the first day and then you go away is just torture. There's nothing fun about it whatsoever. But our schedule after that, when we would go away, would be travel, train the next day, play the next day, night out. Travel, train, play, night out. And if we got a day off, that was a day out. And then it was travel, train, play, night out. So 2 weeks was just...
How come you want so many things? It's a mystery.
No, because what is it you were saying about British players?
This might sound really stupid to anybody who knows anything about fitness.
Yeah.
But we kind of looked at it as, if you can get through this...
Because you're fit.
Imagine the travelling. Because none of your private jets, by the way. We used to sit in a bus for like 5 and 6 hours going from Norway across to Denmark to Sweden.
But you know.
And then you had to train the next day. You're still recovering from your hangover. Then you play, and then you have to get another hangover. So, but we actually looked upon it as it was a test, and you got through it. And if you got through it without anybody giving you a rollicking, any of the coaches, then that built you up.
You could have made it a lot easier by not drinking.
No, it's not part of the rules.
It wouldn't be so much fun.
But you know, it's funny because in American football or the modern, let's say, modern sports, players from teams, collective sports, they have to come ready. They have to arrive ready, and they start the tactic and the technique. The preseason was very nice to create an atmosphere. For the new players to come into the team and the new colleagues and new partners, and it was absolutely fantastic for that. Nowadays, they have a personal training, they're a personal trainer, and they come and they're ready, but they don't create that.
Glenn Hussein, Glenn Hussein joined us from Fiorentina. And so the Fiorentina regime was, every game, they go away for like 5 days. Into the mountains. And in pre-season, they were away for like 3 weeks the mountain. And they never got out, and they were locked up and the whole thing. And so he joined us from Fiorentina just the day before we were travelling to go pre-season tour. And after we played the game, we were sat in mine, and I used to share with Bruce Garobola. So it was like 2 in the morning, we're in Switzerland, we're out in his balcony, there was the biggest mountain you've ever seen, and it was almost like the lights were on because it was full of snow, so you could see everything, it was clear. And it's like 2 in the morning, and we're sat having a beer, and Glenn Hussein just turns to us and goes, I love this club already.
I love this club already.
I decided to leave Chelsea when I did the pre-season with Ranieri. We went to Italy, I went through what Stevie just explained, and I said, it's not for me. I didn't want to have an Italian, because I knew Marcel Desailly told me 3 days before the game they have to go to the hotel, they don't get out. I went to England because I didn't have to go to the hotel, because you have to show up at 12 to play at 3, and that's perfect for me. So when Ranieri came up and said, okay, we're going to go like 15 days in the mountain, and the only time you go out is to pray for the I don't know, the somebody, and training 7 in the morning, 10, and 4 p.m., and after you have to go to bed at 9, and every day is the same. He said, well, that's not a life for me. Bye-bye, Chelsea. I'm sorry. I love you, but bye-bye.
I know, it's like Del Piero said they used to have competitions to see who could get into the gym earliest at Juventus. He told us here.
This may be they won a lot. Maybe that's maybe why they won.
That's why they won a lot.
Maybe that's why they won a lot. I want to ask you guys this, because while we're talking about pre-season, any footballers that I used to know did always dread it, because it was coming up and they knew. And there were tales of footballers throwing up on the first day when they had to go back to training.
It happened to me too.
It did.
Throwing up and carrying on running.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember in Strasbourg.
Yeah, that wasn't an excuse to stop.
Exactly.
I don't care. Get on.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Hot. Next question. How much impact will the World Cup happening in the middle of the season have on teams and their performances? Any chance the clubs with less players on the international level might take advantage and displace known top fours across Europe?
We don't know, because it never happened.
Theory.
The advantage that they have is they have to stop any competition. Where in rugby, they carry on, and so it's an advantage for players for teams who don't have internationals. We don't know. I think players are ready, and I think it's going to be kind of refreshing to stop with the club daily training and games with the national team, and come back and play with the club again. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I don't see any issues.
Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of strange for the guys that are not at the World Cup who are in the Premier League.
Especially if you hit farm, right?
They can go on holidays.
Well, I mean, forget that. What do you do? Have you got to come back 2 weeks early on your own? If Nottingham Forest have only got 6 guys who are not at the World Cup, what do the 6 do? Do they have to come back on their own 2 weeks earlier and start doing pre-season again? What do they do?
We're going to start again, because it's going
to
be Christmas and New Year's Eve. So in England, we know we play, but in France, Germany, and some other countries, they have a break. They have almost a 10 days break.
Well, they come back and then they break, I think, with some. Interesting. What about you, Jan? Do you think it's going to have an impact on those teams, the ambitious teams that might be able to take advantage?
Well, the big teams and the most money, they will always find a way to do it with training camp, not as we used to have back in the old days. But I think that the biggest impact will have in this transfer window, I think that is a bit been under-communicated, because the World Cup coming up at this time, there could be clubs that think that their big players will have a great World Cup and they can sell them in the next window and things like that. I think so. There is a lot of consideration now. There's also a lot of players who like to be fit. They know their place in the team, coming up the World Cup in 3-4 months and all that kind of things. I think that the big, like Steve is saying, they will find a way. They have to keep themselves fit. You can't just give them three weeks holiday. I think in England they start 26th or something, Boxing Day, don't they? So they will find a solution. And always the clubs with the most resources, they will find the best way to do it.
Frank, who was the best manager that you worked with?
They're not very known, to our audience, I would say. I was trained for 6 months with Daniel Jean Dupeux in Strasbourg, and he was a calm coach before, and he was very smart, very well educated, and he had very good ideas about the football. Of course, the one I enjoyed the most my time was Ruud Gullit, because of the person first, what he represents to me when somebody like him decides to pick you up and hire you, you want to give him everything. And the year and a half that I spent with him were absolutely fantastic, because I won my first trophy. When he was sacked, we were, I think, third in the league, qualified for the semi-final of the Cup Winners' Cup, qualified for the semi-final of the FA Cup or the League Cup, I don't remember. So there weren't any reason for him to be sacked, except the finances, and I think it will happen. But he was more than a coach; he was a friend, and so I will have to put it in the first spot.
It's funny that Craig does not share the sentiment.
Well, I understand that.
I would suggest that Craig's was a little different to the picture you painted.
Yeah, and I know. I'm very surprised.
I wonder why. I feel like the move to five subs in the Premier League deserves more discussion, especially in the context of this transfer window. Do you agree? Jan?
Well, I think that discussion is a bit funny. I mean, who said that Jurgen Klopp has got his way? I think that we should be aware of the intensity of the players. Like Liverpool last season, they played every possible game that were possible to play. I think that the five subs is okay with the intensity. You saw now at the end of the season where the players had to play, was it four games in 10 days for international games and all that kind of thing. So as my answer as the last one, it doesn't matter what kind of rules you will make. It will always benefit the best clubs anyway. Mm. Because if you have one sub, they will have the best player as their number 12. If they have 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, they will still find the best player. So get on with it. Five sub is okay. We have to look after the players as well.
I think football is evolving, and I think you have to accept that. A long time ago, you had no substitution. On my time, you had two. Then it came
one.
In one. It came to three. I can agree with that. And as Jan just said, you know, when you are a Liverpool player, and we saw the Champions League final, players were tired. They didn't give, yeah. And it's still entertainment. So you want to have freshness, and I think it's nice to have a five substitution.
I'm sorry. I understand what you and Jan are saying.
Do you ken what I'm saying?
I ken exactly what you're saying. I understand exactly. The problem I have is that 1,000,000% five subs is such a huge advantage for the bigger clubs. It's not a slight advantage, it's a huge advantage. We're talking about nearly half a team. They can change half a team at a drop of a hat. And yep. Not only are they changing half a team, they're bringing on world-class players. So how are the other teams supposed to compete with that? I mean...
But that's life. I mean, they already have advantages having good players.
That's life. It's not just life.
No, but if people are forcing it through,
you can't say it's just life. It's wrong.
Well, it's
five subs, Frank. Come on.
We don't really care about what's going on and what players are thinking and the clubs are thinking. Again, it's an entertainment, and we don't want to see the end of the season with players playing World Cups, playing final Champions League, being tired because it's not what we want to see. We want to see spectacles.
No, but
you don't say that?
I thought you said spectacle.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry,
Frank.
But I think that
lost in translation. Suddenly.
How was your French?
Pardon?
Spectacle. You know what? That's funny because I just had a Scottish accent, so I'm sorry.
We just realized as a Scottish guy, he's correcting a French guy on his English. That is a fantastic place to be. But I would say that it's also a compromise because the big federations, the international federation, FIFA, UEFA, and the league, they can't agree on the fixtures. So this is a kind of compromise to the clubs to kind of rest them a bit because the fixtures last season was unbelievable with all the cups and all the international breaks. So I think the five sub thing is a compromise to give the club sometimes. You can argue as Stevie is doing, but I'm back to Frankie. This is Frankie said that this is entertainment, and I think that let's see the players. You see Manchester City. Let them put Gundogan on, a great German football star, on to decide the championship. I mean, that is a part of the entertainment.
Sadly, we're going to have to sub Frank out.
Yeah, I know.
Losing you.
Well, you know, if it's for a better one.
Ian Dark's coming off the bench.
It's an entertainment.
Yeah. It was over before it even began. But for more spectacles like this, make sure to always check us out here on ESPN FC 7 days a week.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.